This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Well, hello, beautiful.
Holy caffeine!
It's the world's greatest super friends.
Ronnie and Aaron.
Faster than a streak of lightning.
A DC Comics podcast.
Absolute.
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah, sure, why not?
I'm Batman. I'm Batman.
Batman.
He's a hipster.
The Flash world's fastest human.
I mean, I grew up with Wally West.
Think about the future.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
Dude, you're a dumbass.
You are foolish.
Ooh. DC Absolute.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. It's just like, it doesn't make sense.
Hello everybody, this is Aaron here. I have been at New York Comic Con for the past couple days, and I was able to attend the Constantine City of Demons panel. This is a recording of that panel, so it's a special bonus episode for all of you guys. It's a new DC animated film that's coming out next week, and I hope you enjoy it. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can. I'm on Twitter at Aaron S. Bell. Ronnie is at Ronbar316. The show is at DC_Absolute. Or you can email us at AbsoluteDCPodcast@gmail.com.
What's up, gang? It's a big room. What? Hello? Is that it?
No, we're here.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. So we're all here for Constantine. Thanks for coming. So let me get a little business out of the way first. So how many people have watched the Constantine shorts on CWC? Well, you've seen five, right? But Constantine, this project is actually... it's a movie. So there's a lot that you haven't seen. There's at least an hour that you haven't seen. We'll get into that a little bit here. But let me tell you that, as you know, it's produced by Warner Brothers Animation, Blue Ribbon Content, and of course, DC Comics. DC Entertainment. Tell me, boo. Bad vibes, guys. And distributed by Warner Brothers Home Entertainment, and this DVD will be on sale, this Blu-ray will be on sale Tuesday, October 9th, as an Ultra HD Blu-ray combo pack. Exciting. With the 4K version, and DVD and digital, and best of all, rated R. Early on, a few people were like, hey, what about like a PG Constantine? It was like, so, rated R. So, now, let me introduce the panel. Unfortunately, Matt Ryan could not make it. Because he's doing Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah!
So, that's what you do with the bad team. There's more live-action Constantine, but of course he couldn't be here for this panel. Next time. So, first up, let me get my list here. Is Butch Lukic. He's a producer on Constantine and also works at Warner Brothers Animation. He's worked on Justice League Unlimited. Listen to my water, Butch. And next, you all know him, you all love him, J.M. DeMatteis, the writer. Next, he really wanted me to say this. Emmy award-winning character designer, Phil Barassa. Everything you see here. Phil is a character designer that, Phil, we probably work the most together on these DC projects, right? How many people have seen Dixon? The animated Fuck Bill. Bill takes credit for everything at Warner Brothers, guys. Even if I didn't do it. And next, Rachel Kitsy. Rachel is the voice of Angela. And last but not least, Danny O'Hare. Alright, well, let's get into it. We're going to watch a few clips, but first let's talk a little bit to the panel. Jay, we'll start with you. Constantine, you've written for the character, you wrote Justice League Dark, our previous DC animated film. Justice League. So what is it about Constantine? What is it about this character? And also, Nightmare Nurse, you created that character.
Yeah, not I created the characters. Okay, yeah, which is why I snuck her. It's this way again, it's a jewel. You know, when we did the press at WonderCon, I was asking other people that question, what is it about Constantine? And, you know, for me as a writer, I think it's the, I like characters with duality. I like when there's a push and pull with a character. Constantine can be a total bastard. And it is often a total bastard. And yet, he always seems to end up on the side of the light in the end. And it's that push and pull, for me anyway, between those two sides of his characters that make it interesting to write, and I hope for the actors interesting to play.
Okay, but, you know what about?
This might be a tough interview, guys. When you're looking at the script, after jamming as a script and translating Constantine from Phil's character design, I'm working in the whole panel, guys. This is what you do when you're up here. You gotta work in everybody on the panel. When you're translating it, how does that work?
Most of the script, we follow pretty much to the T. It's pretty violent. It's pretty, it's very bloody. Danny smokes cigarettes all the time. Yeah. Other than that, it's just, there's a lot of sequences where we had to design quite a bit of characters and demons, and it's a lot more considering the 5-minute content that we had to split and then add an extra 30 minutes of content. There's a lot of material in there. So it took a lot of work and a lot of people to produce it. So I thank my crew for all of that, for the hard sweat and blood and tears. And Peter for making us do it. It was fun in the end, I'll tell you.
I want to watch a clip. You guys want to watch a clip? Again, like we said, Nightmare Nurse. Feel anything about designing this character?
As far as the tone of the whole thing, I want to kind of piggyback on what JM was talking about. I think when you're dealing with a character like Constantine, we do a lot of lighthearted, or not lighthearted, but like, you know, capes and tights characters.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something liberating about doing something that's truly dark, but not dark for just the sensational aspect. It's a very dark world that these characters inhabit, and there's something fun and liberating about going there artistically and creatively, like, with regards to, you know, it's a different genre in and of itself. So you're dealing with, like, this gothic, you know, occult noir, which is, you know, it's a different beast entirely from our normal fare at, you know, DC, so it's really fun. And designing, like, demonic characters is also liberating in a strange way, because we also do a lot of, like, very pretty, perfect people in the superhero genre. And, you know, there's almost no wrong way to do these monsters and villains. And you have this incredibly compelling, very flawed anti-hero that's leading the whole thing. So just from a creative standpoint, I think for all of us, you get to really take the cuffs off and have a lot of fun.
Cool. Thanks, Bill. Alright, Josh. This movie is not for kids, guys. It's here. It actually gets pretty freaky. Thanks a lot, JM. Danny, you played Chaz in the film, but interestingly enough, you've also done the voice of Constantine, correct, in Justice League Action?
Correct, yeah.
Which is also a good show.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it would be a good idea or fun if we got the two Constantines in animation together.
That's right.
That's fine. Out of bugs.
So, playing Constantine and playing, like Phil had mentioned earlier, this noir kind of occultish thing, what do you think about? What do you bring to the character?
Well, I thought in this version it's a lot more, it's a lot darker than the Justice League action. I thought it would have a lot more.
Love it.
Considerably. But what I liked about it as well, I mean, there is that darkness and there's that complete fantasy element as well. It's also really grounded in human emotion. And I love the relationship between Constantine and Chaz. And Jay obviously put the backstory in that they grew up with each other, and that's how obviously the story starts. Because Chaz's daughter is in danger. Don't know how much I'm meant to say. That's been released though, hasn't it? That part has.
Spoilers.
So there's that great relationship there, and they've been childhood friends and everything, and they've got a great shorthand between the two of them, and a lovely sort of relationship. Constantine favorably refers to him as Knobhead all the time, which is lovely, which is what my wife calls me most of the time as well.
Before the movie or after the movie?
Just all the time.
Uh-oh.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, I just love the relationship between the two of them, and that sort of continues throughout. So even when all this sort of spectacular things are happening and these demons are coming, it's actually grounded in a really sort of normal place, which allows for it to go as fantastical and as dark as you want it to. And it's just, I think it's wonderful. I saw the whole thing yesterday myself the first time. It's great.
Yeah, this version of Chaz, he's true to the actual comic book version, more so than any of the other versions. You know, the live action version was, I guess, an American guy.
He was, yes.
Yeah.
Chaz is like the, for me, he's the audience surrogate in a lot of ways. He's the most grounded, real, down-to-earth character, and his emotional need, his relationship with his daughter is what drives the whole story. But without him, you lose a lot of Constantine if you don't have Chaz for the contrast.
Yeah,
it really humanizes Constantine when he's at his worst. Yeah.
Well, also, I suppose Chaz is entering these sort of fantastical sort of, you know, circumstances. His eyebrow is arched and he's, whereas for Constantine, that's every day, sort of, you know, these things appearing, these specters coming up, whereas Chaz is our audience, as you say. You know?
Yeah, and also, if you've seen the first five-minute versions. Basically, you see they haven't seen each other in probably like 18 years, so obviously they, you know, they just get back together again because of the dilemma of Chaz's thought that they have, he has to help.
So Rachel?
Yes.
You did the voice of Wonder Woman on Butch's show as well, correct?
Yes, I played Wonder Woman in Justice League Action. Now I'm... and she's a tiny bit more wholesome than what I get to do.
Yeah, a little bit. You want to talk a little bit about the character that you play in Constantine?
Sure, I play Angela, the spirit of Los Angeles, can I say?
Yes, yeah.
It's right there in the name. and she's held on to all of the slights and also the heroic moments of that city, but she's really this kind of demon held onto those dark moments. And when Constantine needs some insight and needs some help, she's there to point him in the direction that he needs to go. But she doesn't do it with her fingers.
No, she does not. You want to talk a little bit about that? Because Angela and Constantine, as written, have some, let's say, steamy scenes together, which you guys might have not seen yet, but you want to talk a little about during that EO session?
There's a real freedom when your target audience isn't nine. it was a lot of fun to see faces on the other side of the glass as we were recording going, Oh, you can do that too? That's not kid appropriate at all. There's a bathroom and a bar and a costume that's, you guys are really hot in this movie. Thanks for that. What was really great is is that I was also super pregnant recording it. So there's this hot and heavy, you know, heavy breathing happening in between. We'd be like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I just have to catch my breath for real. Just hold on. It was pretty exciting. It was, the photos from that day are pretty hilarious, but the scene is pretty sexy.
It's an intense scene.
You know, Angela's the one main character here that isn't from the comics.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
An original character. We adapted this from a graphic novel called All His Engines, but it's a very loose adaptation.
Are you familiar with it?
Mike Carey and Vino Nomanto go out and read it. It's a great book.
That's great.
But we changed a lot and we built out, and there was one little line in the graphic novel where Constantine is walking through Los Angeles, and he said, and I could feel the eyes of the city on me. And I thought, wow, you know, what if that's literally true? It's never referred to again. You know, and I thought, that's having a body in the city. And that's where the character came from.
Yeah. It's a great moment. So, and she comes when Constantine is particularly needs her.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Another clip or what, team? So, this clip is called Hellhounds. And I don't think anybody's seen this before. This is not in the CWC's streaming release. So, this is a big scene between Chaz and Constantine. So, Josh, wherever you are, whoever you are, this is, I mean, it looks so great. Does it not look fantastic? This is personally why I have always loved animation, why it's my job. It's the mixture of words and pictures. One needs the other. No one is not greater than the other. And this movie is, it's a great film, and we're all super proud. We were just talking backstage about how proud we all are to be a part of this. Phil, when you're doing these character designs, like specifically Constantine, because it looks like Max,
right?
But you don't want it to be a caricature at the same time. But Matt, how do you do that? What is your process?
Well, I cover my office walls in his set photos.
That's not weird at all.
I build a little shrine to Matt.
Okay.
Because I already had the pictures, so it's, you know. No, but it's, you know, with that character, I mean, sometimes you're taking a character and it's the existing, like, interpretation from the comic books, it needs an update, or it needs to be punched up, or nobody's touched it in 30 years or something like that. But with this character, he's been so grounded and so kind of perfect from the jump that it's pretty much a one-to-one from what it looks like in the comics.
Right.
So the same influences and the same inspirations that I'm taking from the comics, the CW team, the live-action guys are looking at that same stuff. And so they nailed the look with Matt, and I'm looking at that same reference. So it's, he's not a character that you need to interpret too much. He's like a disheveled, like, incredibly, you know, sort of charming rogue character in a trench coat who's smoking and drinking all the time.
Right.
It's not something that you have to, it's very intuitive. So, a lot of times I do really like to get in and redesign and punch things up and modernize. The trick there is to not lose the essence of the character. The trick there is to be faithful and reverent and respectful and not break it while you're updating it. But with Constantine, it's a perfect archetype from the jump, so you don't really have to do much. It's like, that's when your job is almost the easiest.
And you know, Matt looks just like Constantine. I mean, he just does. It's like, there's a couple of really, really perfect casting choices in superhero movies like Robert Downey and Iron Man, but Matt and Constantine, perfect casting. I remember the ads were coming out for the TV series when I was writing the Justice League Dark comic book, and I looked at the ad on the back, and you could flip into the comic, and it's like the same guy.
Yeah.
You know? So it's really perfect casting. It does such an amazing job.
Yeah, the visual of that character was, you know, perfect from the get, which is why you don't see a lot of variation in its various interpretations throughout media.
And what's Keanu Reeves?
Yeah. That's a choice.
Did he play the Constantine?
Oh.
I don't know what they're talking about.
But the overall look, I just want to talk about that. Now, the other thing I'll say too is you see him smoking, right? You see Constantine smoking. You don't know how hard we had to push and argue to make sure that stayed in the film. Because nowadays people are, he's not vaping, gang.
Cigarettes though, yeah.
Yeah, herbal cigarette. That's
herbal cigarette.
Yeah, yeah. They're vegan cigarettes. Yeah. But the overall look of the film, Butch, it doesn't look like any of the films that we usually do in the palette, in the effects, and everything else. You want to talk a little bit about that? Or?
So, I mean, to me, it kind of does. But you guys say, well, I don't, but oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just a little bit. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't look like that. The main part is what we were doing in the storyboards and directing Doug Murphy, who also directed Scooby-Doo, by the way. We were actually just going ahead with the script as written, but adding more violence and blood and guts and, you know, things being torn apart. And we were waiting, even the smoking. We said, just go for it. Let him smoke as much on camera as you can get. And let's see what kickback we get back. Now, I didn't know what Peter was fighting against because I never heard about it. But obviously, he was stopping whatever the forces were from us from pulling back from the action and violence and blood and sex and whatever. Specifically, we weren't told that it was supposed to be R-rated. We just kept going. I told the crew, just do whatever you want to do as gory as you want to get, and let's see where these guys hold back on us. So based on that, it's got a particular feel and look on it. Yeah.
All right, let's do one more clip. This clip is called Miklanta Kuli, which is, well, you'll see. But this is a good Chaz and Constantine. This is a good monster clip, too. So, Josh, you want to roll that clip? Yeah, can you say that name?
Not bloody gold. It's hard enough to spell it consistently, you know?
That's the advantage to what we do. It's always written right down in front of you.
Phonetically, too.
Thank God.
Typically, phonetically, yes. Alright, should we do some questions from the audience? Yes? Right, wow. Nobody? Okay.
Josh is a man with the clip rolling.
I know. There's a hand over here. Is there mics over here again, or how are we doing this?
Oh, there you go. Boom. And a spotlight. How fantastic.
By the way, there is a world premiere of this film tonight at the AMC Empire 25, and there's some other tickets, but there may be some other tickets, so I would, if you guys are interested. Alright, where do you want us? Let's go here first, yes.
Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Hello.
Is there any chance of a Matt Ryan Constantine movie? Like an actual movie, not animated? Sorry. You work for what we got. So, second question. Can we bring back a TV show?
Yeah!
Yeah, I mean, the answer to both those questions is, I don't know.
We made cartoons.
Yeah, we made cartoons. You did. But, I know, look, there was such fan love for the character that's why he is on. He started on Arrow and went to Legends, and that's why we're doing these films. So, yes, the more you guys love Constantine and Matt Constantine, the more you'll see.
My name's Chris.
Hey, Chris.
If you could choose any character to work on another rated R animated movie, which would you choose?
Lobo!
Yeah, I guess Lobo.
Jan?
Since Lobo was created by my good friend Keith Giffen, I'll say Lobo, too.
Oh, you draw Lobo a bunch.
Yeah.
Is Lobo's Young Justice, or?
Yeah, we have Lobo. We have everybody in
there. Yeah, everybody's in Young Justice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm drawing everybody, so I don't really care.
Dave, Rachel, anything with DC Universe rated R?
Well, I think Charles needs his own movie after this.
Yes. Part of my heart that would just like to see what happens with a rated R Aquaman. I mean... Always.
Okay.
That's called Game of Thrones.
I'm into it.
I'm going to say rated R, Ian Bushbug.
Also created by Keith Giffen.
Yes, another Keith Giffen. All right, over here.
Hi, I'm Sean. One thing that's nice about Constantine compared to other heroes is the whole magical and mystical aspect to him. I'm just wondering if there's a standout mystical or magical moment or spell in this movie.
Question, Jan?
There is, and I can't tell you what it is because it's the climax of the film. I will give you a hint that I lifted it right out of one of my Justice League Dark stories. But it's become the whole heart and soul, the whole point that the end of the story turns on a very specific spell. And if I told you, I would ruin the whole movie for you. And it will break your heart, guaranteed.
Yeah, it is a pretty heavy movie. No, it's interesting watching the film that we've done visual effects for years. You know, you do what we call Kirby Crackle, right? And there's explosions and there's pyro and there's all that stuff. But it's very recently that we've gotten into supernatural and kind of those kind of effects. So we spent a long time working on that to try to figure out the right way to execute those. And
yeah, and I think that is the visual component to this film. Like, to me, the thing that stands out, to talk what you and Butch were talking about, is like the color palette really stands out, and the sort of magical effects and all that stuff's brilliant. So, yeah.
We did get the effects back from overseas Korea. They weren't good enough, so we had Matt Girardi, Peter's brother, and his crew. They plussed them up.
It really shows. I mean, it looks amazing.
Yeah. So what is it like for you guys dealing with animators? Sorry for jumping over the question.
We have people with animators that are all the way across the world.
Skype.
Email. Okay. I mean, I don't know if the audience knows, but it's still the way, you know, animation for us hasn't really, the means of production has changed a lot, but the way we do it hasn't. And, you know, Phil and Butch and Jan, we all do our work in Burbank. But then we take all that and send it to our overseas partners in Korea. And they will animate the whole, you know, it takes 8 months, 9 months for us to start to see footage sometimes.
Yeah, the aspect that we control is basically pre-production and post-production, you know, and so we're guiding the project here, but the animation is done by brilliant animators in Seoul. And then, you know, we have to take all the disparate components and put it together, and that's when the final result you see is a collaboration between all the talent here and all of our partners in Seoul, Korea.
If you're interested more, I can get into some of the accounting later too, if you guys want.
My name is Ben, and I remember seeing the CW and how we learned about what happened to Astra and Newcastle and all that stuff. Is there any chance we might see more of that stuff happening while John's helping Chad rescue Trish?
Yes.
Yes. That's a big yes to that.
It's a very important part of the story.
Yes.
Hugely important part of the story.
Good question. Did anybody pick from one of those videos?
Did you ask that question? No, I was just curious.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Emma. The question is, how good and bloody do you think this movie could be for 7?
10. This is not appropriate for you.
Yeah. That seems like a failure. Exactly. Now you'll enjoy the level of gore and blood and heart.
If it's not enough for you, we're going to get you out. I do want to stress that there's a really human, moving, emotional story underneath all that.
Yes.
It's not just a gore.
And Rachel's performance.
Of course.
That you should definitely not watch.
Hi, my name is Christos. Jay, I'm a huge fan of the Spectre one. This is really epic. Can we see, is that just going to see Spectre versus Constantine? You have like a Freddy Krueger super villain. I feel like Spectre.
Wow.
That's way above my pay grade. I don't make those decisions, you know, but I would love to see it. Working on the Spectre for those couple of years, one of my favorite gigs at DC that I've ever done, so thank you.
Yeah,
anybody else over there?
Jonathan Moore asking, are we going to ever see Constantine maybe pick up the Fate mantle? I'm just saying.
Well, that's a good. I'll leave that. That is a good question. You've done some stuff like that in Young Justice, right? There's been a few characters.
That yeah, I mean, I guess it gets passed around, you know, based on whatever sort of, I don't know if there's a worthiness clause there or something, but I feel like those are distinctly different characters. I don't know that they would mix well, but then it's all about the story, you know? It's all about what kind of, you know, narrative we could weave around that. It could probably be pretty cool.
Have you ever read Dr. Fate, Jim?
I wrote Dr. Fate for like 3 years now.
Yeah, okay.
It's another great character.
Yeah.
Fantastic character with so much potential.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's more and more interest in, and we feel it on our side too, in the more supernatural, kind of esoteric parts of the DCU. You know, you guys did the Justice League Dark film, which was very successful for us, both as a film and, you know, commercially, so there's a lot more interest in exploring that side.
And it allows you to get into other corners psychologically and metaphysically that you can't get into in superhero stories.
Right, and at least for me, those characters tend to be a little more vulnerable in a way, you know.
Thank you.
Welcome.
And, my name is Ken Easer. How's it going, guys?
Hey.
I got a basically two-part question. They're not well related. The first one is, what are your personal favorite DC heroes? Personally, individually. And the second one is, what's coming up with the design for the demons? What did you guys pull from? What did you pull from? Whether it be like the comics specifically, or just mythology, or like where you want.
Damien, you have favorite DC characters besides Chaz?
I love Constantine basically myself because of the darkness in it, and because of the smoking, and because of the rough edges. And you can seem to get away with any thing with him, you know, the confliction is in the character and the way he's such an anti-hero. I just really love that about that character. So,
I mean, for me, it all goes back to Wonder Woman from the time that I was a tiny little kid. It's a really good time to be a Wonder Woman fan. There's great writing out there in the comics. There's great writing in the movies that are coming. So for me, that's where I come back to over and over.
I guess I'm a big fan of a lot of the characters from Titans, Teen Titans. I like younger heroes because I like the vulnerability of those characters. I like that they're not perfect. I like that you're seeing them grow and you're seeing sort of this, you know, imperfect, sort of unfinished being also dealing with having path, like, you know, the regular teenage stuff, but then also having this, like, you know, sort of fantastic component where they're superpowered. That being said, I also like the really push stuff. Like, I love Jack Kirby's Fourth World, the Cosmic Odyssey component. It's like DC's, you know, space mythology, and I think that's really cool, so.
I'm glad you mentioned the Kirby stuff, because those are probably my favorite comics of all time. If you haven't read Kirby's Fourth World stuff, you are missing
it's
amazing, amazing work. And in terms of favorite characters, you know, between the animation and the comics, I've written 98% of these characters. So it's hard to pick. But, you know, I love the icons. I love Superman and Batman. You know, because you grow up as a kid, every kid loves Superman and Batman. But as a writer, I think I really prefer the supernatural characters for the very reasons we were talking about.
More places to go.
You know, Constantine, Spectre, Dr. Fate, Phantom Strangers, really fascinating characters that take you into all kinds of metaphysical and spiritual worlds. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm born Batman all day. I wouldn't mind doing some of the lesser characters like Shade the Changing Man or Space Gabby. We did in Justly Daction, it was appropriate for that type of show. But, you know, little characters like that go a long way for us.
Mm-hmm. I'm crazy for Kirby.
Yeah.
So I like Mr. Miracle, I like Demon, I like any Fourth World. Yeah, it's all. Yeah. Does that answer?
Yeah, the second one was the inspiration behind the demons.
Oh yeah, that sounds like a film.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, so when I first started working on this world, it was actually for our Justice League Dark movie, which initially had a PG-13 rating, which is, I had drawn Constantine with a cigarette, and we had to lose the cigarette and all that stuff. We wanted to have him smoking in that movie, just so you guys know. But the demons,
the initial inspiration. We were just trying to push it as far as we could, and so it was just trying to, like, nightmarish, you know, sort of Lovecraftian, you know, bizarre stuff. For this one, we have, like, specific cultural, you know, influences, like, I think it's the Aztec or the Mayan, stuff like that. So, yeah, we look at everything. I think, like I said before, when you have, like, these monstrous characters, you know, you pull inspiration from a lot of places, but the fun thing is, there's no rules with characters like that. You just go into, like, the darkest kind of place that you can, and you can kind of find all these nightmares, sort of subconscious nightmarish things. So yeah, we had a lot of fun with that.
But what I like to say as well, like, well, having watched the thing, they all seem to have different personalities as well, so it's not like one sort of nebulous monster type,
yeah,
which makes them more interesting, because some of them are sort of funnier, or, you know, one's quieter, or one's, you know, blah, you know, so they're all different personalities,
yeah,
they're not just a monster, like.
Absolutely, because you don't want everything to be occupying the same space.
No.
Now, you want to show that range, and it adds, like, an inherent organic nature to the way we're
telling. Yeah. Like, the Beru character in this,
right,
is fantastic, and he's almost like a sort of theatrical,
sure,
sort of, you know, ground down type of thing, like, you know, I was thinking that Orson Welles, honestly.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
On Olympian kind of thing, like, you know, that sort of the bigness of them, you know, it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right on. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Matthew. My question is, going forward with any possible incarnations of Constantine, what are the odds of us seeing someone like Zatanna or Zatara? They do have relationships starting in Dark, right?
Yeah, they have
a long history and a love affair, and it's great fodder for
them. They're a magical couple, guys.
That one kind of ended on a high note with them too, right? Like, I can't remember exactly how to button that up.
In Dark, I think it did. I mean, in the comics, it didn't end that way.
Right, right. Yeah, but I think at the end of that film, it kind of had something hinted at. I think they might.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, my name is James Garcia, and
hey.
Are the demons going to have, like, any, like, special powers or anything? Like,
legions? Like you guys were saying, the big demons, Earl, they can completely think. They have very specific, I can just rattle that off at the
table.
They have very specific powers. And then you saw the Hellhounds, you know, so, yeah. And they each embody something different, like your character is a very specific kind of demon that's kind of the embodiment of Los Angeles.
I think one of the cool things about the demons in this is that they're each as grounded and unique as all of the human characters, and that's what you're going to see, is that they're very specific. So the powers vary according to what their role is, not only in the story, but in the world that's been created around them. So you're going to see a lot of interesting things.
Hi.
Hi. So I've never read the comics. I don't know about their, but on the Legend of Tomorrow TV show, they had Constantine be bi. And I was wondering if you're going to have a representation like that going forward in the animated movies.
Woo!
Yes. That is the character. He is pansexual. And that doesn't include humans. That includes everything.
Omnisexual.
Interdimensionally.
Well, there is a couple of scenes that aren't in the 5-minute versions, but you do get an implied impression of that, so that is in the Blu-ray version.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bob Brentauer. I just have two questions. The first one is there any mention to the bigger DC universe in this movie? Kind of like the Justice League Dark. I know it's based off the show, but
yeah, it's connected to this. I think it's connected to the Vixen stuff, right? Or is it its own thing?
No, it's not. It's all connected.
Yeah, right.
And we've done this
before
with
partners and
our partners at CW.
Yes.
And with Home Entertainment to do these movies, you know, shorts into movies. Vixen. I don't know if you guys saw the Ray Freedom Fighters. Ray.
Woo!
But yeah, it's all part of the one big universe. So yeah, I don't think we explicitly mentioned.
No, there's no plot point that hinges on something.
Yeah. But it is in continuity, yes.
And so it's part of, like, the whole movie 52S.
No, it's not necessarily connected to the films as far as, like, the ones that James Tucker and I do.
Okay.
But
to me, and James and I had a laugh about this, we kind of figured if anyone can cross, is it?
It
if
is.
Anyone can cross those dimensional barriers,
it's Constantine.
Okay, yeah. It is.
Yeah.
It's
a process. My other question is, are we going to see a Justice League Dark 2, or are we going to see like a more Swamp Thing centric storyline?
Swamp Thing centric, what a great sentence. Hold on, man.
We're discussing Justice League.
Okay, there we go.
Thank you.
Here's this. Up as Constantine? Nice job. Really terrific. Everybody look at Constantine.
I'm John.
I'm wondering what type of Hellblazer stories you'd like to see animated. Perfect for that sort of.
What, which other story?
Yeah, what about Hellblazer stories?
Any other ideas, Jay?
Yeah, but because what I would like to do hinges on this film and things they haven't seen yet, I don't want to say
yes. But we love this movie and this character. And again, it lets us all explore things, you know, that we don't really get to explore in some of the other, like, full canon, you know, the big seven Justice League kind of films. So yes, we'd love to do more, and there are things that, like James said, hinge on this film that we'd like to keep exploring.
And also this is based on two or three Hellblazer incidents, so
right.
That's that would carry on if we continue with these.
Right.
It's more of an origin story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, let's look here, yeah.
Hi, my name is Bryce Jones, and I had a question. So for the movie, how did you go about casting for the voiceovers? And do you ever look for new talent?
Is this still an issue right now?
Okay.
Hey, I can send my resume.
Well, look, we work with very talented, very knowledgeable casting directors, you know, see my Andre Romano, like that. So, but, you know, we've worked with both Rachel and David before, so we knew, and, you know, I think a lot of times, I don't know about you, Phil, but a lot of times when we're thinking of these characters, we already have the kind of, at least I do, have the voice in mind and the kind of performance that we're looking for, so we have to.
Yeah, Wes Gleason, he's our voice director, so he's been doing a lot of these DVDs for years now, and he knows a lot of the actors, and he gets auditions for us, and then we, you know, we go through them and figure out, okay, that guy will fit this. And he takes reels all the time. Do you guys want to say something to him?
What I do want to say is that this is not my first project with Warner Brothers Animation, but I did have a first one time. And so there is room for new voices and new talent and new people to come in. And I'm very grateful to Butch and to West for listening to new voices, because that's how I got my first job. And now I'm really happy that they just came back to me for another one.
And the truth is, we all had a first job. I mean, you know, like, everybody working on these properties, it's a stewardship. Like, we contribute to a legacy, but we didn't create the characters. We don't own them. We're just participating in this tradition. So there's always going to be new voices that are then going to inherit that from us and from the other creative people that contribute to this medium and to these characters.
So if this is something that you love, if this is something you want to do, keep going. There is space for you. There is room for you, and you should keep heading in that direction.
I just want to say also, just the voice work in this movie is consistently amazing, I thought. I mean, just the performances uniformly are just great. I was so impressed.
Yeah, that's thanks to Wes Gleason again. He isn't here, but I'm sure he'll be happy.
Wes did a great job. And I particularly, the first thing, because we see these in early versions that we call animatics, which are just very rough sketches that are kind of timed out after the initial record. And you can already see the performances. And David, you and Matt's friendship and the tension that it starts out in, and how you start to become familiar and your friendship starts to build again. It was all there, even when it was very skeletal drawings, that performance was there, which is the beating heart of the project.
Really. Yeah, I know we're coming from, but I sort of came into animation and voiceover work, and there's a tendency from myself at the start to
Maybe trying to be a bit bigger, or maybe a bit cartoonish or something? To board it because, especially in the early sort of forms, as you say, like, you sometimes, you don't have the Xenobi animation.
Right.
So you think, okay, I'm gonna sort of overemphasize, and I'm gonna, but the wonderful thing about, you know, and thanks to Wes as well, like, you know, he was saying, no, just act it, just play it, truth, because it's almost like a different sort of format now from the sort of cartoons we grew up with, when everything was sort of Looney Tunes and whatever, like, you know, and everything was so big and,
right. He's really old, he grew up on Looney Tunes.
The rebrand, the rebrand, the rebrand. I mean, watching it back, you know, and allows you to sort of breathe and to take the sort of time that you would in a normal conversation, and I think, and that actually pays off with all the fantastical stuff, because then it's actually grounded.
Yeah, we're trying to create believable worlds, so yeah. Everything has to complement that.
Yeah.
And the voice acting, and we've always been really fortunate to, again, like Peter said, work with brilliant casting directors, but then get some of the best talent in the industry to bring these, like, characters and these roles to life. I mean, I think across the board, on all the projects that I've been involved with, we've had such phenomenal voice talent involved that it's a huge part of the success of these features and the TV shows.
I mean, we were just with Kevin Conroy backstage.
Woo!
That's Batman.
He's Batman to so many people. Yeah.
When he's like, hey, you asked me to sugar, I'm like, holy shit, Batman. Yeah.
Yeah. Eating his avocado toast.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Oh, so I'm Johnny, and I've got two quick questions. Number one, I noticed that in the comics, one of the things you tend to see is that hell is very factionalistic, a lot of like the bigger demons all being very rivals and fighting each other. Are we ever going to get any same sort of Game of Thrones of hell? And second question, is there any way to still get into the premiere for this movie or something? Oh boy, I'll find out about that. Hold on, let me check the question. But yeah, Jay, do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because it does between Barul and you care.
Yeah, in a way, this movie is sort of a Game of Thrones in hell, because there's a whole group of demons that are all fighting for dominance for these, oh, it's already been set up, sorry, for these franchises. They're franchising hell in Los Angeles.
Right.
And so there is a group of five demons over there, and then there's Barul over there, and they're all trying to outmaneuver each other to win the McDonald franchise of hell. So you get a lot of that in this movie.
You get a lot of that.
Constantine is in the middle of all this, playing everybody off against each other.
He's like the agent.
Isn't he? The middleman?
Yeah. Yeah, those scenes were too violent to show here, so those are in the extra footage.
Yeah, they are insanely well-executed horror animation. Yeah. I'll try to find out anything about the other. We're getting down to it here.
Hi, my name is Susanna.
Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering if the movie is going to come to Netflix to Europe, or are you just going to sell it on maybe the one you already?
That's another good question.
Did the other ones make it?
I don't... You know, we have this DC Universe, I don't know if you guys have heard of our streaming service, DC Universe. So I have a feeling that these might end up probably on the DC Universe.
Is it Europe? Is going to be the same? Or?
I think well, some of the stuff comes to Netflix, but there aren't plans to make the service.
Okay. Because we used to have Flash and Supergirl and the Legends of Tomorrow. Then they took away Legends of Tomorrow. Yep. They have no Jason, no Teen Titans, and now the new ones.
We'll find out about that.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're probably not the last person that's
going to
ask that question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. Hey, Ari, I'm Michael. Hey, I know most of the movies are like 72 minutes or so. Are we ever going to get like a 2 hour long or 2.5 hour long epic story?
This one is actually significantly longer. This isn't a 90-minute movie, because we do have, you know, even this 18 or so, 19 minutes that will never be released unless you get the film, which, by the way, is coming out October 9th. So you should all get up really early on October 9th and line up to buy this movie. And I think we've all remarked on how great it was to have that additional, you know,
10-15 minutes to tell the story. Even some of the directors at Warner Brothers Animation that didn't work on this.
Yeah.
Like James Tucker and Bruce Timm had remarked, like, wow, that story really unfolds because we have that additional time. So that, I think, is something we're going to be looking at moving forward.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, no more questions. So I'd like to thank the panel here. Thank you.
Tarzan wasn't a ladies' man. He'd just come along and scoop him up under his arm like that. Quick as a cat in the jungle. But Clark Kent, now there was a real gent. He would not be caught sitting around in no jungle scheme, dumb as an ape doing nothing. Superman never made any money for saving the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Hey Bob, Soup had a straight job. Even though he could have smashed through any bank in the United States, well, he had the strength, but he would not. Folks said his family were all dead. The planet crumbled, but Superman, he forced himself to carry on. Forget Krypton and keep going. Superman never made any money for saving the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Tarzan was king of the jungle and lord over all the apes. But he could hardly string together four words. I, Tarzan, you, Jane. Sometimes when Soup was stopping crimes, I'll bet that he was tempted to just quit and turn his back on man. Join Tarzan in the forest. But he stayed in the city, kept on changing clothes and dirty old phone booths till his work was through. And nothing to do but go home, home. Superman never made any money for saving the world from Solomon Grundy. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. And sometimes I despair the world will never see another man.